This episode of The Huddle is brought to you by SeatGeek, our presenting sponsor and by far the absolute best way to get great tickets to any event. If you want to hit a concert, a game, anything, if Rusty throws a release party for his Piccolo album, SeatGeek will get you in. Just download their app, look up the event, and you'll have access to every ticket at the best possible price. They stand behind everything they sell, and you don't have to worry about any hidden fees like shady SubHub. What's more, right now, SeatGeek is literally paying Huddle listeners to use their product. Just hit the Me tab on the app, enter promo code GSW, and you'll get $20 off your first set of tickets. SeatGeek. Great tickets, great prices, no BS.
There's 5 seconds to go. Curry with four. Curry with three. Takes a three for the win. He got it! 0.6 to go. Still time. Curry casually just crossed half court, and he knocked down his 12th three of the night. It's a new franchise record. Warriors 121, Oklahoma City 118.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Brian. With me, as always, my boring producer, Scott.
Scott here.
And our resident insider, the San Francisco Chronicle's beat writer for the Golden State Warriors, and a man who enjoys a good story about a highway speed, Rusty Simmons.
Yeah, I raced all the way home. I got more stories for you guys.
Yeah. Would you get all the way up to 49 miles per hour on the way home?
Never that fast.
Yeah, well, obviously. Scott is obviously with us. We've announced him. He gave us his trademark, Scott here. But my understanding is he's going to be a little bit limited in this episode, yeah?
Yeah, I had oral surgery this morning, so I'm a little busted up here. I'm on the IR.
So help me, Rusty. Is he being a giant pussy for not just fighting through this, or do people who have had their mouth operated on, are they excused from podcast services?
If it was just a tooth thing, I think that he would have to play. But when it involves your tongue, I'm going to go ahead and say that's important enough to take a sideline day.
This will be shocking. I think it's just being a giant wuss. It is what it is. I guess we'll find out next week which one of us is right, see if he can actually make his way back. Way too much Warriors news to be spending time talking about Scotty's mouth. So let's go ahead and jump into the insider's report. Take advantage of the access you've had with this team. Just came back from one of the longest road trips of all time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Feel pretty good to be home.
It made no sense what we did. The Portland, LA, Atlanta, Miami, Orlando, Oklahoma City map. I don't know how they came with that, but we made it through it, and we're home. Home for 17 of 24, which sounds fantastic.
Scotty, I know you cannot answer because of the whole tongue surgery thing, so you can just nod or shake your head. When Rusty says things like that, do you feel sorry for him at all, or do you recognize that this man gets paid to travel with the greatest team on earth?
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, whether or not you could hear it, let's jump in, man. Insider's report. Here's my first question, and I hope it is a remarkably short topic. Tell me about Steph's ankle. He rolled up the left ankle. I think it was Westbrook who fell on it during the OKC game. Looked a little bit nasty. He finishes out that game in historic fashion. We'll cover that, but he missed against Atlanta. What's up?
Yeah, I think he'll be back Thursday for the Oklahoma City game. He went through his full shooting routine Wednesday and gave every impression that he plans to play, which is a stark contrast from him sitting under the basket demanding that his team foul to stop the game. It looked really bad from the beginning.
That was a personal nightmare. Yeah. That's the thing that we're constantly worried about, right? And just a quick personal story. I watched that game on tape delay. Before I started up the game, I got a text from a friend who said, I hope Steph's ankle is okay.
Oh, wow.
So I watched that entire game. Every time he's going down the lane, it was like watching a horror movie when they go into the basement. It's like, oh my God, here it comes. You know, so it was an absolute nightmare. Focusing less on my neurosis, if it had been a playoff game against Atlanta, would he have played last night?
Absolutely. Okay. He actually suited up before the game. And Bob Myers walked in and was like, what are you doing? And he goes, this is what I lift weights in. But he needed someone to tell him, you are not playing.
Was that fool trying to sneak
his, into
the game?
His intention is playing.
Like maybe he just shows up.
So the inactives were Festus Ezeli and Andre Iguodala. So Steph was active. So he was going to try to sneak out there in his uniform. And keep his consecutive streak of three-pointers going.
I love that he gets fired up like that. Yeah. That's awesome. I like even more the Warriors' decision to sit him. We've talked about stuff like this, but one of the really random downsides of chasing history is the risk of, you know, going after something at the risk of something far more important. So you play Steph last night to keep the home streak alive, but you kind of risk his overall health. So I like that they had a big picture approach, no?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think the one out they have right now is that they can say all of this stuff is not about chasing history. It's not about the 44-game home streak. It's not about winning 73 games overall, because they're only 3.5 games up on the Spurs. Mm-hmm. They have to win every game right now.
Especially since we all recognize they better have home court advantage against that team, because just like the Warriors, the Spurs have yet to lose a game at home, and I believe they've played more games at home this year.
So their streak, 29 and 0.
Their streak is even more impressive. All right. Let's turn to another topic that I'm excited to talk about, but I'm also a little weary of, and it has been dominating Warrior news. That's the tirade that supposedly, maybe I'm using the wrong word, the halftime speech that Draymond gave during the OKC game. Here's how I found out about it, and I think most people did. Lisa Salters, during the ABC's coverage, reported this right after halftime.
And we're going to check in with Lisa.
Hey, Michael, while Steph Curry's back in the locker room now being checked out, I can tell you about a very emotional locker room at halftime. One of the players went on a profanity-laced tirade. I did not hear what precipitated it, but he was yelling so loudly that I could hear everything that he was saying. I think you heard a little bit of it as well, Mike. I think that it was Draymond Green. The indications that I've gotten from other players is that it was Draymond Green. He was yelling and screaming, "I am not a robot. I know I can play. You have me messed up right now. If you don't want me to shoot, I won't shoot the rest of the game." At one point, people were trying to get him to sit down from what I could hear, and he was daring people, threatening people, "Come sit me down." It then got very quiet. Guys came out of the locker room. I'll have more when we come back from commercial.
What happened? So that what you just heard right there, and I've also read a bunch of rumors that I am ultimately going to run by you, but for now, let's just stick. What have you heard? What happened in that locker room?
Yeah, I think Lisa Salters gave a really good report on what happened. We all know Draymond Green is fiery, and he has gotten into his teammates at halftime before. He's gotten into the staff at halftime before. He's challenged everybody. I think Steve Kerr called this one unusual, I think because of how far it went. There was a point when Draymond Green challenged Steve Kerr to physically sit him down.
So that literally happened. Yeah. That was one of the things, okay.
Yeah. Come get me, he said. And so I think that probably is why it's unusual. He's always fiery. Kerr's always fiery. It all started because Draymond Green was 0 for his last 12 from three-point range. He feels like he can't play freely right now. He's not supposed to shoot. He's supposed to move the ball. And none of those things are usually a problem for Draymond. He gets more pride, takes more pride in setting guys up than he does scoring. He'd be happy to go through a game without taking a shot and have 20 assists. But when you go 0 for 5, then 0 for 10, then 0 for 12 from three-point line, that starts playing with your head. And I think that's what we heard was the frustration coming out.
This sounds like more of a cumulative trauma thing. It had nothing to do with OKC. It's just frustration that was slowly mounting.
Yeah. And I think Draymond also knows that when he's the only guy who's going to do this, right? And when he does those kind of fiery things, he's talking to everybody, right? A lot of times he puts himself at the center of it, but he's also saying, what are we doing here? We're lucky to be down by 4 points to Oklahoma City. We just played like trash in the first half.
That makes it sound like a motivational ploy.
I think it's both. Yeah.
All right. Before we get there, let me run some rumors I've read about exactly what happened in that locker room. And let's go with true, false, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
All right. Here's the first one. I've heard that Kerr showed video of a Green mistake, and that's what kind of started this whole thing.
Could be very true. I don't know that for sure. And I'll start by saying the Warriors, as they should, have done a really good job of keeping things in the locker room.
Yeah,
but if I've asked them directly about specifics, they've been honest about it. That one I have not asked them.
How about the robot take? So the next thing I hear is that in response to that video, exactly as Lisa Salters threw out there, he screams, "I'm not a robot."
Right?
Is that did that happen
multiple times? And what he's talking about.
Is he, in fact, a robot?
He might be. He might be a cyborg the way he's playing this year. He's been fantastic. But he does not believe that he's a robot. And what he's talking about is he needs to play freely. He needs to allow his vision and his instinct to flow. That's what makes him a brilliant offensive player, right? And he can't be thinking about, I'm not allowed to shoot, I have to make the next move. He thinks 3-4 passes ahead. He can't be thinking about not taking a three.
That is a generous view on things. I am very impressed. You should be his agent. I am fairly certain.
I'll take some of that cut of that last contract he got. Didn't Lisa Sutton
specifically say, he said, I'm not a robot, I'm going to make mistakes? I don't think he was talking about I need freedom. He just means he's going to make mistakes occasionally.
I don't think that's what he was talking about. I think he was talking, under Luke Walton, he felt as free as he ever has as a player, right? So free that he would check himself back into games. They have a unique relationship that dates back to last year where Luke was his confidant. You know, he's his one-on-one assistant coach that works with him before and after games. Luke Walton challenges him all the time because he thinks that when Draymond's mad, he plays better. So Luke Walton says things like, don't shoot because you can't make it, jokingly, to make him mad so that he does shoot.
Sure.
Steve Kerr tells him, don't shoot, you can't make it. We got other guys who can, seriously.
So have you watched, have this never happened, right? Let's say the tirade never comes out. Have you noticed him getting increasingly frustrated under Kerr as compared to where he was under Walton, or not necessarily?
No, it's a different dynamic for sure, because the relationships are different.
Yeah.
Steve Kerr and Draymond Green's relationship was kind of forged in a similar situation. It started out horribly for the Warriors last year with Draymond Green. He was trying to show that he was the stretch four that Kerr wanted. It was going awful. He wasn't making anything. And then he started playing the way Kerr wanted him to. And then during a timeout early in the season, as he's going to, he got fiery and cussed at Kerr, checked himself as he was about to go back in the game and apologized. And Kerr said, no, that's why I love you. I love that passion. Don't ever lose that. So that's what these guys' relationship is. Two of the most competitive people in the world, one who didn't back down to Michael Jordan and one who's never backed down to anyone in his life. They're going to butt heads, and 5 minutes later, it's over.
Here's what I'm hearing you say, and then I got a couple more rumors to run by you. That this isn't the giant red flag fire that everybody's making it, that this is part and parcel of two remarkably competitive, fiery dudes, and even more so part and parcel to competitive, fiery dudes actually being involved in a competitive job together, right? And then even more than that, this is the type of relationship that the Warriors have specifically created within that locker room with Draymond.
Yeah.
They want him to be able to exercise these demons and to put all this stuff on the table,
For years, they needed an alpha. They needed that Energizer Bunny, that guy who was not scared to say something.
Right.
His rookie year, Jarrett Jack told him to help him out on defense, and he told a well-respected veteran point guard, no, stay in front of your man. So this is a guy who has felt like he could say whatever he wanted to anyone.
Who told him that?
Jarrett Jack.
Who's that?
He played for the Warriors at one point.
You may not know this, Scotty, but Rusty had to... It really felt like he had to explain to me who the hell Jarrett Jack was once. Meanwhile, I'm not, I won't even jump back down that rabbit hole. It just continues to bother me. So we've set up the notion that this is not a big deal and is something that the Warriors necessarily wanted. Let me run another rumor by you, one we've already kind of verified. It sounds like at one point he gets up, Kerr tells him to sit down, and then Draymond says, make me?
Yeah.
Warriors don't want that.
Right. Yeah.
You're doing too much with that.
The come get me. You don't challenge your coach in a physical thing.
No.
And my understanding is that it was an open-ended challenge of any of you come get me. Any of you try to stop this.
Nothing has got to make a room more silent and awkward than that kind of uphill power dynamic challenge. Right? I mean, because that, you know, just add in the multiple levels, and maybe the most important of which is that Steve Kerr is kind of disabled right now.
Right,
I mean, like, why are you taking shots at him?
But I think it also shows how close the Warriors are and how well they know Draymond, that this fire is going to pass. Mm-hmm. Bogut very well can physically put Draymond Green back in his stall.
Yep.
Steph Curry, in a very different way, would say, hey, Draymond, that's enough, and Draymond would sit down.
Yep.
Luke Walton could have told him, hey, That's the point. That's the limit. And he would have sat down. But nobody did because they know Draymond does this fire. It gets everybody going. It gets him going especially. And they came out and played better in the second half.
And that's one of those things you can never unring the bell, right?
Yeah.
Bogut
yeah.
gets up and forces him down.
Right.
maybe you get through that game, but the dynamic has changed in that locker room. So that showed some intelligence
for sure.
Here's the last rumor I've heard, that after it got awkward and after nobody got up to force him to sit down, Draymond sat down on his own to take off his shoes and at least pantomime as if he was not coming out for the second half. True, not true.
That's a hilarious one. I've got no indication that he took off his shoes or ever planned on not playing the second half. He did claim that he was not going to shoot in the second half, which we've seen Kobe Bryant do at times. But no, he wanted his sneakers on and wanted to be back out there to help him win.
We got a lot of people who wrote in on this issue. One of them was Ken from Oakland, who wrote in to ask this. Quote, was Draymond's outburst in the locker room something that's happened before, and you and the rest of the local scribes were aware of it, but respected the sanctity of the locker room and didn't report it? Or was this the first time it happened, and the woman from ABC/ESPN scooped you guys?
Yeah, I think we've heard about blow-ups in practice, in timeouts. I had never heard of a blow-up in a halftime locker room. And ABC, ESPN pays for fantastic access to be able to be back there at the locker room during halftime. So she did her job and reported on what she got. She did a great job.
So she scooped you.
Yeah. And Kerr called it unusual, which makes me believe that what we knew before, the practice tirades and the timeout tirades, are probably what it was, and this was the first time at halftime.
It was the only question that matters. Draymond has said all the right things, seemingly, right? Yeah. Played pretty well last night. 14 rebounds, 14 assists, 6 steals, 4 block shots. They had a win. Also, they won that OKC game.
Yeah.
Anything to worry about going forward, or is this done?
Yeah, it's done. That's one of the things with these two guys. It's kind of like when you get in a fist fight with your best friend or your brother, like 5 minutes later, you're hugging and having fun.
Or your equipment manager. I mean, whatever.
Well, maybe not so much that one, but yeah. I wonder what you guys think about that. I was surprised that Draymond Green felt the need to apologize publicly. What'd you think about that?
I think he absolutely needed to.
Really?
I don't think he needed to for purposes of the locker room. I didn't have the access you do, but you kind of assume that those relationships are going on behind the scenes anyways. And again, they won.
Right.
You know, so I mean, had they lost the game and this thing kind of cascades in the wrong direction, then I'd be a little bit concerned. But they won, and they won in amazing fashion.
Right.
There's no way they weren't celebrating on the plane ride home, right? They weren't talking about Draymond. So he didn't need to do that for the team. He needed to do it for the media. What this was a reminder for me is that disaster sells, boy, more so than success. The only way you can make the most successful team on earth a more popular media topic is add disaster to it,
right?
Because everybody wanted to know what the hell happened with Draymond.
Right.
So he needed to come out and apologize just to put out the proverbial fire.
Yeah.
So to kind of show us, like, oh, he's contrite, and let us all kind of understand what the power dynamic is supposed to be. So I thought it was the right call. I'm sure he's not sorry. You know, I mean, like, I'm sure that none of that was really genuine.
He got what he wanted out of it, right? They came out and played better, and they won.
That's exactly right. A person who tells his spinally disabled coach, come make me sit down. The fool isn't worried about giving you an apology afterwards, you know, but it is what it is. He had to do it.
And Kobe Bryant would tell us that teams need inner conflict, right? He had that great, at Oracle Arena early in the season, he had this great sit down after the game talking about greatness. And clearly he's been on great teams. He's been greatness. He's been one of the best players, if not the best player in the league during portions of his career. And one of the things that he said he liked everything about the Warriors, but I don't know if a team that doesn't have inner conflict can keep this going. And I asked Luke Walton about that right after it, and he said, I would have completely agreed with Kobe until I got around this team.
Yeah.
And now I think they're seeing that a little bit of that inner conflict helps.
What do you think? Do you agree with that?
I think we don't get to see practice anymore because this team is so stinking competitive that they're yelling at each other.
Right.
And my thing has always been, if there's not a physical fight in practice during the season, your team doesn't care enough.
Huh.
That conflict doesn't go past the practice facility. It doesn't go out of the locker room, but you need that because it shows you care.
It's weird. I've always said if a player doesn't at least take off their shoes once at halftime, they're not going to make the playoffs.
Right.
So, I mean, I feel like we're right on the same page here, man. So, I mean, that all kind of comes together.
Well, you'll be happy to know that Bogues takes his shoes off after his pregame shooting drill and then again at halftime and then again postgame. So he's kind of tripling up on it.
You have no idea how happy that makes me to hear that. So thank you so much for that behind-the-scenes knowledge. In fact, that's about as inside as we're going to get, so let's flip over to the Warriors' focus. We've talked about the two downsides of the OKC game. We talked about Steph's injury. We talked about Draymond's tirade. Meanwhile, I'm pretty sure that is the most satisfying and best regular season game I have ever watched in my life. You went to it. Give me a real take. You know, I mean, you've been to so many games, it's going to be hard to distinguish them. Does this at least make the pantheon of greatest games you've ever attended?
Oh, for sure. For sure. One thing is, I've mentioned before how much I appreciate Chesapeake Energy Arena.
OKC.
That place is, oh my goodness, it's a...
Oh, they're so great.
It's a different thing.
I don't want to hear about OKC Arena.
It starts with a convocation, and the fans won't sit down. They didn't cheer. They were silent when Steph Curry was hurt. Everything they do is right. That place,
I hate them.
That place
How's
is
their
right.
jocularity level? Amazing? Or
very high.
Just through the roof.
The other thing that Oklahoma City does is they still let riders sit courtside.
Oh.
So we have a brilliant
Weird why you like that arena so much. I'm sure that has nothing to do with it.
We have a brilliant view of all these things. And normally in an overtime game, when I know I have to file at the buzzer, I'm panicking and I've got six different storylines going, and I'm hoping that one of them holds up so that I can file that at the buzzer. During this game in overtime, I found myself, I stopped typing and I was just watching. I was getting paid to watch basketball, and it was fantastic.
I hate you so much, or I'm at least resentful of your amazing job. So let's see. Iguodala goes to the line, right?
Yeah.
They're down to, what was it, 0.6 seconds left. Do you think he's going to make both of them?
I wrote that they lost the game.
Yeah, exactly right. And what stuck out in my, and or, let me follow that up. Did you actually do that? Did you actually write?
Oh, yeah, that was one of the six ones that I had going.
Okay,
was that, yeah,
go.
They missed that.
I was positive he was going to miss both, or at least one of them. And what stuck out to me, and what Scott and I would discuss now if his tongue wasn't betraying him, was the celebration or his reaction. So after he hits those two shots, he does what seems to be a variation of Jordan's shoulder strut.
The three-point game.
Right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And but there's a little bit of a difference, right? Jordan did it, and it communicated, I can't believe this either.
Right.
You know? When Iguodala did it, it was kind of a, well, what else did you expect?
Yeah, yeah. Why are you guys doubting me? Yeah.
I won't tell you what I expected. I expected him to miss both of those shots. When you shoot what seems to be like 30% from the free throw line in a Golden State Warriors uniform, we're not expecting you to make both of those shots. Yeah, like, I was really impressed. And it added extra drama.
Yeah.
It was like a Disney ending. The guy who can't hit free throws hits the two that sends it into overtime.
Yeah. Although I will say this about him. He is a terrible free throw shooter, but he is super clutch.
Yeah.
He makes big shots all the time. And when we were in Detroit, they stayed an extra day in Detroit, and I watched him. He works on his free throws all the time. And I watched him shoot one-handed with the – he'd have two balls, one in each hand. He would release one right-handed and one right behind it left-handed. And over again, he would make both of them.
What?
And yeah, and it started making me think, like, if you can do that, why don't you shift to left-handed?
Yeah,
or why don't you just make your right-handed ones?
Ask for an extra ball and just hold them both out there.
But I think there's some he had higher arc on these free throws than I think he has in the entire season. I think there's something about him in clutch situations where he just goes back to those moments and thinks, oh, in Detroit, I can do this with two hands, so this is going to be really easy. And then he shrugs and says, hey, what did you expect?
That first one was all net.
Yes.
I mean, it was
perfect.
Just a splash kind of thing.
And then I wrote, he missed the second one, and they lost by one.
Yeah. Obviously. I was watching with someone who's a pseudo-Warrior fan. I said, watch this. We've definitely lost.
Yeah.
And then I lost all credibility, but you know, it is what it is. How about Steph's three to win it? Did you think that was going in?
I did. I did. He eyed that thing up from three or four steps in the backcourt. You could almost tell exactly where he was going and that it was going in. And I know some people have made fun of the NBA changing the official scoring from 32 to 37 feet. But I think it shows how remarkable the game was, how indelible that moment was. I think if the Warriors win the championship, a lot of us will point back to that game, that moment, and you want to get that right. It was a 37-foot shot, and 32, just it's wrong, and it doesn't sound as good. People wanted to get that right.
It's a Mount Rushmore moment.
Yeah.
When we think back on this, whatever the hell happens, that's making my top four.
For sure.
You know, I mean, there's no other possible way. The same way that it's telling of what Iguodala's done in the past, when I was watching and thought he was going to miss it, I was expecting that shot to go in.
For sure.
I can't think of anyone else in my life. 37 right. feet. It's an insane shot.
Yeah.
It's a terrible shot to take. And I was positive it was going in. Yeah. In related news, we spent some time during our last podcast breaking down whether or not his celebration in Atlanta on the Atlanta bench in front of Cade Bazemore was disrespectful. If that was disrespectful, this was like dropping a nuclear bomb right. on the term respect. Like it was like a 9-part dance that he did all the way across the court. He started over a bunch of times. I mean, I loved it, but there's no way he didn't piss some people off with
right,
that.
Right, right. I have two things to say about that. First of all, last night when he missed the game against Atlanta, he was Bazemoring on the sideline. So that friendship is secure, obviously. he's not upset about him shimmying in Bazemore's face. And the celebration in Oklahoma City, I think, dates back to Stephen Curry talking about what a bad dancer he is. And he only knows a couple of moves. And if he gets past the second, third move within the shimmy, it gets really bad. So he has to go quickly to something else. And there was a lot of time to dance. So we got to see like 8 or 9 different iterations of dances. He went to the Bernie at one point.
He started with the Bernie, I believe, which again was so fantastically disrespectful. It is impossible for me to really adequately put them into words. I got to ask this, even though I know we're running long on this subject. When Durant hit the 3 in overtime, I think they went up 4. I was positive they had won. I think the Oklahoma City fan base was positive they would win. How did that fan base take the loss?
It was tough. You could tell.
Did you cry because you loved their fan base so much?
I stayed after and hugged quite a few families that were upset.
Thank you for these seats, he said to anyone who had listened.
Yes. By the way, have you seen the line that Steve Kerr tells Kevin Durant after he hits that 3-pointer that we're sure has won the game?
No.
They're standing there right near the scorer's table, and Kerr sneaks up behind him and goes, "Man, KD, this is a man's game tonight." KD didn't know what to make of it. But it was like the Warrior, it was Kerr's way of saying, "Oh, we're still in this
thing."
That's
exactly right. That is a badass comment. You know what the game made me think of before he found out? I thought of you. What I was thinking is that I do hope the Warriors add him, but not just because of what he adds to the team. It's the whole addition and subtraction thing, right? Uh-huh. You take him away from this OKC team because we saw it in overtime. You know, once he fouled out and all they had was Russell Westbrook, they're not a threat, right. not Absolutely. With just him. Yep. So I wouldn't mind taking him out. And that leads to my last question about this game. You and I have disagreed. I view San Antonio as our biggest threat. Yeah. You've told me OKC. Yeah. We've seen one of their two matchups, right? After that last game, did it strengthen your argument? Do you feel like they are the biggest threat, or did it make you less worried about them?
Oklahoma City is the biggest threat. They're huge. They're talented. They're just now learning how to play with a new coach, and they're still third in the Western, in a historically amazing Western Conference, and their home court advantage. I know the Warriors haven't won a regular season game in San Antonio since Tim Duncan was created. But they've won a playoff game there. It's not that big a deal, right? Oklahoma City is a hard place to play.
Was Tim Duncan created?
He was created.
Oh, I did not know that. That's shocking is what that is, but good to know. All right, let me push us in a different direction. One of the other media stories we've been hearing coming out is shots from retired players about how their team could very easily beat the Warriors. Right. Steven Jackson came out and said the We Believe team could beat us, although to his credit, Kalina Azubuike didn't agree. Cedric Ceballos, I mean, a name I haven't heard forever. And the last time I thought myself or was thinking about Cedric Ceballos, the only thing I thought was, my God, you're fat. And how the hell did you put on all this weight? So he came out of nowhere. Oscar Robertson, legitimate player, said his team could beat. And Bogut had a great response where he suggested his under 14 team might be able to beat the Warriors. Does this stuff bother them? What the hell is going on?
It's perfect for the normal guys that we know do this, right? Draymond and Andrew Bogut, who search for this stuff to find every slight that's real and created and feed this stuff to keep fueling the fire. This is the first time I've seen that it made Curry clench his jaw a little bit. Because not only are they saying that they could beat the Warriors, they're saying we would have shut down Steph Curry.
Right.
And
that's what they start with.
Yeah. And Curry's the best player in the league. and would be fantastic in any era of basketball. He works so hard that he's going to find a way to be great. And he thinks they're demeaning his work ethic when they say that, that he couldn't play in those other eras, or that they'd shut him down or they'd beat him up. And so about as close to seeing him crack is when he clenches the jaw like that. And that's the way he feels about all of these things that are being said.
I don't think I like hearing that. Yeah. So generally speaking, I like when people kick into that next gear of F you, you know, like I don't want to hear that at all. But there's also something to be said about...
Well, didn't he? I mean, he averaged 43 points a game after it started happening.
Well, like, that's what I mean. What I would almost like is for him not to be frustrated at all because he knows he's so much better.
Right, right.
I mean, we just talked about him taking a 37-footer, and we didn't pause to really jump into how crazy that is because he does it all the time. Right. That's insane. If anybody else, if any other player in the league had the type of time he did, because he shot it before he needed to, right? If anyone else had rose up from that spot on the floor... Right. The fan bases would be furious.
Yes.
Warrior fans were excited. Yes. Oklahoma City was terrified because he's doing things that no one's ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I understand his frustration, but he has always shown to be less neurotic than me. And I'd almost like if he just stayed above it, say what you want. Who cares? Yeah. You know, like, of course you can.
Well, and he's in a tough predicament, right? Because he respects Oscar Robertson. How could you not?
Right.
He respects Isaiah Thomas on the court.
Yeah, I forgot Isaiah. That's right. Another guy.
So he has to be careful, like that. He can't group all these guys into one. If it's as Bogut said, a 12th man on a team that didn't make the playoffs, he can desecrate that, but he can't desecrate these Hall of Fame players that he respects and watched as a kid. So he's in a tough spot with this stuff. So what he's doing is playing it out on the floor. He's been ridiculous since all these comments started.
I just wanted to take a shot at Cedric Ceballos. If nothing else, just take a shot at him. Point out that he looks like the old player who used to be that's been eaten by a boa constrictor and is now just remarkably larger than it needs to be.
When you have bad knees, man, it's hard to work out.
So. When you have bad knees and you spend all of your time eating nonstop, then that's exactly what happens. Warriors had a game in Orlando this week. I don't care about Orlando, and that game didn't necessarily stick out.
Even Potter World?
No, well, okay. Harry Potter World, I do. And actually, there's another topic that we're going to be covering. But before we get there, the coach of Orlando, Scott Skiles, a guy I used to use in NBA Jams, by the way, what it made me think, and it's one of these random-ass huddle thoughts, but if the league decided to have a battle royale and they made all the coaches fight to their death in one large fight inside of arena, if I had to bet on one coach, I think it might be on Scotty Skiles, man. I think my money's on Scotty.
He would definitely be highly seeded. He is tough. Steve Kerr was telling us some stories about when they played together in Orlando, and his favorite thing was when he would call out, Skiles would call out every opposing play as they came down and tell his defense where everybody was going. And sometimes when the offense would look confused, he would say, "Hey, idiot, you're supposed to come off this screen and come back over here."
I love that.
And there's one game where he's just getting lit up. And for some reason, Ice Reynolds on the Orlando bench is just going at Skiles. And so finally, Skiles just starts going, "F you, Ice, F you, Ice." And that's the guy he was. Like, he would challenge anybody. He was looking for reasons to mock the opponents during the game. He's a tough dude.
There's a million portions of that story I really enjoy. Maybe my favorite part is that you mentioned the words Ice Reynolds like it was Michael Jordan. Like, everyone would be like, "Oh, Ice Reynolds? Of course he went after Scotty Skiles." There's like one person on earth who knows who Ice Reynolds is, and it's Ice Reynolds. I mean, like, who the hell are you talking about?
It's fantastic that I thought I had to explain to you who Jared Jack was, but gave you no connotation
zero,
for Jerry Ice Reynolds.
Just zero connotation whatsoever. Another thing worth mentioning on the Orlando game before we start talking about Harry Potter is that Comcast f***ed me again. What you don't know is that I have one of the worst relationships with my cable provider of all time. I taped this game and it skipped from 5:15 left in the first half to the fourth quarter.
Oh, you didn't miss anything there.
Well, I missed something. I probably missed at least two Ice Reynolds references. You know, I mean,
and 30 Stephen Curry points.
Look, I don't like swearing unnecessarily. I'll keep this remarkably short. But fuck you, Comcast, so many times. Why do you keep screwing me? Please stop doing that.
Comcast, by the way, is looking for a new podcast, and we have now been taking off that list.
Okay. Well, I didn't know that. Comcast, you are phenomenal. And I take back everything I said and would love to. I mean, in fact, have you checked out SeatGeek? Because they're great as well. The Harry Potter thing, I had forgotten about it. So news came out shortly after the Orlando game, at least on social media, that the Warriors, and what I could tell it was Harrison Barnes, Leandro Barbosa, Klay Thompson, all went to Harry Potter World?
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic.
Did you go?
No.
Were you invited?
No. I was busy driving to St. Petersburg so that I could fly to Oklahoma City. So
having the time of your life, yeah. Driving nice and slow.
Exactly. Exactly. No, but that is, the video of that is worth looking at. That is as happy as I've ever seen Clay, where he was not at a dog park. He was like a kid again. He's in a roller coaster at one point and actually starts swinging his legs like a child.
No,
like,
he did giddy, not.
He giddy,
no, he did.
And
not.
He played along with all the wand stuff. He like actually, I think he thought it was magic. It was fantastic stuff.
That is truly fantastic.
The other great thing
is,
he's
also dressed like an 8-year-old, so it fit in like just right what you want.
He hasn't backed down from any of this. Like, he got razzed so bad at Oklahoma City shoot around. And he hasn't backed down for any of it. He's like, this is my generation, man. This is our generation. Don't worry about it.
Please tell me he bought a wizard hat that said Clay on the front.
No, but he did like take home multiple wands.
There you go. All right, let's move off to a brand new segment. One I'm kind of excited to try out. So, and I'll give you credit, Rasha. It came from you.
Most things do.
Well, factually incorrect there, but this one did. So be happy at least about one. Last week you were telling us, when we were asking how Steph interacts with the referees, that Corey McGinty actually played a really big role and taught him, look, you want to know their family and kind of treat it respectfully. And what it pointed out to me is that players, superstar players, learn remarkably important lessons from everybody. It's not just from coaches, not just from big name guys, it's from everyone. Yeah. So this section is called Lessons Learned. And what I want to do is give you a player and then ask you what they've learned from other specific individuals.
Yeah.
Because Steph is the man, and because I'm basically picking up on where Corey McGinty left off, let's start with Steph, yeah?
Yeah.
So, what did Steph learn from Monta Ellis?
I'm going to try not to make this sound bad, because I think it's obviously turned out to be a good thing. Monta Ellis had stomach ailments for just about every shoot-around in the history of his Warriors time. Stomach ailments that were so bad that he would not show up to shoot-around. But he always showed up for the game and played really, really hard for 40 minutes. And I think Steph has gotten something from that. He is a tireless worker and I think would destroy his legs with practicing more, shooting more. And instead, he's condensed his shooting routine to a very precise thing. He barely jumps during his shooting routine. It's just getting the form down, getting the arc down. And I think a lot of that goes back to he saw Monte do this, take care of his body, in not the same way that Steph would do it, but took time off for shoot around so that he could show up and go for 40 minutes at night.
Don't expend unnecessary energy.
Yeah.
How about Don Nelson?
I think he learned a ton from Don Nelson, probably a lot of humility. Stephen Curry was starting and playing well as a rookie. And then they go to New York, which is where Steph wanted to go, where Dell was acting as his agent at that time and was really pushing for him to get to New York. And they go to New York, and Nelly just out of the blue benches him and says it's because he doesn't have enough tattoos. Or says he doesn't have any tattoos, which was factually wrong. He did have tattoos. And at the end of the game, the Madison Square Garden fans started chanting for Curry to get in the game. He gets in. It's the game where he blocks David Lee's shot.
Yeah.
And he played so hard for 30 seconds of bench time. It's like where you let the manager at the end of the bench get in.
Sure. The walk-on.
Yeah. But I think that there were several times like that during his rookie year where it was obviously Curry's boys, especially when it got to the 10-day contract guys and it was Moreau and all those guys that were just Cartier Martin, they were all following everything Steph Curry was doing. And I think a lot of times Nelly was like, wait, you're a rookie. I got to put you back in this hole for a second. I think that helped.
Why?
Because Steph is naturally confident, right?
Yeah.
And he grew up around the NBA, so this was not a big deal to him.
Yeah.
He felt like he belonged right from the beginning. But I think you need someone to tell you, hey,
you're not here yet.
You're going to have to be humble at some point, too. There's going to be a game where you go 7 for 30.
Yeah. There are 1,000 players I'd like to ask about, so this is going to be something else that we ultimately revisit. For now, I got one other segment before we get to story time with Uncle Rusty, and it's the mailbag, one we haven't done for a while. So last time you and I recorded, maybe two times ago, I was bitching about bandwagon fans and likened it to me having to wait in line for 30 years. They let me into a club, and right when they let me in, they let everybody else in, and I'm resentful of everybody. And if memory serves, you said that my resentment was misplaced, and that the analogy may work, but we should just be happy that everyone is in there with us and just enjoy it. Isn't that right? All right, so here are the two emails we received. One is from Keenan. From Whittle, who writes in, "F*** Rusty," and is co-signing of not having to wait in line to get in the club. He clearly has never been a fan of a s*** team. Cares anything back to Keenan?
Thanks for the email, Keenan. Appreciate it, man. I have both been a fan and covered really horrible teams. Teams that were purposely losing. Maybe where you lost me is that I'm not a fan of clubs, so I really didn't want to get into the club, so I just couldn't make the relation. But, yeah, as for the teams, man, I've been through it, and this is fun. There's enough room for everybody.
Rusty is far nicer than I. The barbs weren't just directed at you. Ari from Mammoth wrote in.
I like Ari.
Well, you might like him even more after this. Quote, "Don't hate on the fans that jumped on the We Believe bandwagon. I'm only 24, and it's hard to be a diehard fanatic before puberty. So piss off when you think I'm any less than a monster GSW fan now. I've watched probably more games than you and that pussy Washington fan, Scotty, in the last 8 years.
Wow, went after both of you guys.
Hey.
Scott tried to shake off his disability but was unable to do so. Maybe I can speak for both of us. Couple of points. Let me first give you credit, Ari. If you have been rooting for the team since you were born, or at least since right before puberty, then by definition, you are not a bandwagon fan and you don't fit into the group of people I cannot stand. Perhaps more importantly, though, go ahead and settle down on the whole probably watched more games over the last 8 years take. Here's a factual reality. I have been rooting for the Warriors longer than you've been alive, Ari. So by definition, I have caught far more games. And if I did not watch one game in the last 8 years, I would be way ahead of you now. And related news, I've watched every game during that stretch. So maybe back off on the whole angry thing. Although Scott is a Washington fan bitch. So we can at least agree there.
They won tonight.
They're good, man. They just get rid of that coach, man. They might be representing the Eastern Conference in the finals.
Either way, to both Keenan and Ari and anybody out there, jokes aside, thank you so much for touching base. We really appreciate you guys listening. Which leads to our final segment of the evening, probably my favorite, story time with Uncle Rusty. I want to hear about Leandro Barbosa.
Yeah. One of everybody's favorites. Yeah, you could write a book about stories about Leandro. One of the reasons why his teammates love him so much is that he interjects himself into every argument, and a lot of times he doesn't know what he's talking about, and he makes sure to really speak a garbled version of English during that, so that his arguments don't have to be very accurate. Probably the best argument story this year was Draymond Green and him were arguing about the best hamburger. Leandro Barbosa, of course, said that Draymond didn't know what he was talking about. And Draymond rightly challenged him and said, "Leandro, you've never even tried the burger I'm talking about." This is the other thing that Leandro does in all arguments. He lies. So Leandro then says, "Not only have I tried the burger, they bring it to my place when I want it. And I know it's not as good as the burger I like." He is fantastic. He puts himself into arguments and has a brilliant way of making, he would be a great lawyer if facts didn't matter, because he can come up with a story for anything that supports his argument.
From what I understand about law, facts don't matter. So, you know, phenomenal for him. Gosh, huge fun doing this every week. Certainly true this week. Please remember, you guys want to reach out to us. We'd love to hear your takes, and we won't always just ask you on the air. You can shoot us emails at warriorshuddle@gmail.com. Our Twitter account is at warriorshuddle. Rusty has a Twitter account. He may not. I have no idea. Let's not ask him
about
it.
And the people know.
They don't. They don't.
Keenan knows.
Well, Keenan knows. Keenan just unfollowed you, so good luck with that. The website remains warriorsworld.net. Please get out there and download the SeatGeek app. Honestly, great product. It'll help you, but it'll also really help us. And if nothing else, get the $20 players. It'll, yeah. you can use it towards a game you might want to go to. And the promo code on that is GSW. And also, a little bit of news. I'm hoping to take calls next week. For those of you who might want to participate, reach out via our Gmail address. Let us know that you want to. We'll follow up and we'll work out the logistics. Until then, go Warriors, and hopefully we'll see you next week.
Every time I talk, they say I'm too aggressive. I was out here spazzing, now y'all get the message. On the field, I'm over reckless on my Odell Beckham. 2020, I'ma run the whole election, yeah. I've been trending years, y'all a couple days. Easy in the house and we just gotta praise. Nike, treat employees just like slaves. Caleb Brown or Billy, not to run away.
Good.